Hello everyone, it's been a while, but we are back. It's Ricky Wilde and Lee Bennett here with a brand new episode of Unsung Heroes. And today is a very, very special episode. It's going to be in two parts, but brought together in the same episode, if that makes sense, because we have the synthwave queen in our midst. We have Nina with us today. Welcome, Nina.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It is so lovely to have you here. And just to be clear, we are all here in person in the room.
This yes,
is
I'm
not
here as well.
A virtual podcast for once. We're all together in the room. So what we're going to do today is something really quite special. We're going to talk to Nina about her career and what she's done so far and how she got her start in music, what her process is, what she does behind the scenes in terms of being an artist. And then we're going to take a lovely segue into something that will come as a bit of an announcement midway through, which is really the main reason that we're all here today, because we have some super exciting news and a big reveal for you coming up a little bit later on. So welcome, Ricky. Welcome, Nina. We're going to kick off, as we always do in Unsung Heroes, kind of asking you about where it all began, Nina, in terms of, so you grew up in Germany. Where does music begin for you in terms of what you hear around the house as a child, and what sparked that interest for you in terms of music?
I grew up in Berlin, and it started very early, actually. I remember I had in kindergarten had a little performance. I was very, very scared, but I just always had that ambition to sing. I was always singing in the car, and we did always these long road journeys. So I always knew all the lyrics to every song, and it was just, you know.
So what was playing? What music did your family have around you to influence you?
I mean, it was kind of early 80s, without giving away my age too much, but it was around early 80s. So it was definitely a lot of new wave electronic music. I listened to a lot of Kim Wilde.
Oh, really?
Of course you did.
I mean, honestly, this is not, it's you know, she was a huge inspiration to me, and Nina, and yeah, you know, also Depeche Mode, Kraftwerk, and so anyway, so I was in kindergarten, I was about 6, I believe, and we did this performance, and I sang just a song, basically just a German pop song.
Oh, okay.
And I was very scared. I almost didn't do it. But then everyone was clapping their hands, calling my name. And I was like, I guess I just have to do it, right? So I started singing, looking in the on the floor.
How old were you?
6.
6. Oh.
There's a video of it, and we lost it. It's so sad, because it really was. I feel like it was a very, strong moment for me.
Yeah.
Because I was so shy, but I did it anyway. And afterwards, just seeing everyone clapping, and it was a sad song, actually. The singer is Peter Maffay, and the song's called My Child, Mein Kind, and it's about being a father for the first time and the love you have for your son. And
wow.
So it was very emotional and beautiful lyrics, and all the moms were basically crying.
Oh.
So just having the feeling of touching someone,
yeah,
with your voice,
yes,
you know.
So you knew there was, amazing, you had a power, you had something
there. Was,
there
I just
that you
loved
could,
the connection,
yeah,
you know, and I don't think I was able to sing properly. I mean, I don't think it sounded good at all. But, you know, it's just kind of like a child voice. But
you conveyed emotion,
just,
clearly.
Yeah.
You moved people,
yeah,
with what you were doing.
And that
which is the most
important.
Most important.
So that's addictive, isn't it? So at an early age, you have that,
absolutely,
feeling of, oh, wow, I can make people feel something.
Absolutely. This really was a very intense moment for me, and it changed a lot. And then I just went on to, I think I was like 14 or 15. I did classical vocal lessons,
wow,
for a few years.
Did
like
you like
private
that?
Not really. And I realized after a few years, it's not really what I want to do. It was very interesting, and I think I learned a lot,
yeah,
as well, just playing with my voice and what you can do with it. And
do you carry some of that with you now in terms,
absolutely,
of...
Absolutely, yeah. I do, actually, yeah. And some of the songs that I've recently written, there were some operatic things in there, a little bit of classical things, and
okay,
then, just going very high and operatic. And a little bit like, I always see it, a big inspiration for me is also Goldfrapp.
Oh, yeah.
Alison,
Goldfrapp.
She's so talented. Yeah. It's that kind of a thing, you know, where I'm just playing with pop and a little bit of classic in terms of vocals. And but yeah, anyway, so I did that for years, and then I went on to do backing singing for many years.
How did that happen? How did that come about?
It was kind of like I met someone who knew the manager of a German pop star at the time. She was very big, so a bit like Britney Spears for everyone around here, but in Germany. And it was actually quite funny because it started me being at her tour being a clown.
Oh, wow.
Because she loved circus. And everything to do with circus, I think she was kind of born into it. And right. She wanted someone that looked a little bit like her so they can pretend to be her on stage. And all the fans are like, wow, is that Jeanette? And it was me. But yeah, just having a clown on stage, just a little bit of an act, I guess, you know, something a bit different. So I started that way. And
I'm suddenly recalling Howard Jones and his mime. Do you remember? Is it Jed?
Yeah,
do you remember that Howard Jones? He was a 80s synth singer, and he had a mime artist with him on stage.
Right, okay. So that's what
all the top of the pops that he did.
Suddenly came to me. She said, "Sorry, carry on."
It was it was quite funny. And anyway, one of the backing singers fell ill. And then the manager asked me if I want to jump in because, I heard that you can sing as well. Would you like to try it? And that's kind of how it all started. Then I was in, we did Viva, which is like MTV, and the Dome, Bravo Super Show, big Top of the Pops.
Mm.
That was amazing.
So how was that, seeing yourself on national TV?
Amazing.
At home?
Yeah. It felt really good. And I feel like that's really when I was like, I want to do this for the rest of my life. I want to be on stage, you know. I want to perform. I want to connect with the audience. And so that's kind of how it all started. That was when I was about 18.
So there's no secret, like some people will have been part of a girl band or a group. There's no group that Nina was once a part of.
I mean, that all happened more when I came to London.
Okay.
So I did a lot of things where I was in bands, trying things out, doing a little bit more dance or pop rock or something like that. I did a few things in London for sure.
So what happens, what's the leap from being a backing vocalist to go, what's the journey from that, from being a backing vocalist to going, okay, I want this to be more than that?
I think it was quite natural, actually. It was I was very comfortable being in the background and doing backing singing, and it just basically came to an end. So I had to find a new journey. And then I was basically thinking, maybe I should do something on my own. And that's when I came to London and, you know, did a lot of experience. And I guess I just, you know, had a bit of more confidence to think maybe I should try a solo career. It wasn't easy, though. I mean, I must say I was always so, so nervous going on stage. I would be sick a week or 2 weeks before. Mm. It really didn't come natural to be the lead singer.
To be at the front. Yeah.
It's a totally different thing, isn't it, from being a backing vocalist?
It really, really is. Everyone is looking at you.
Is it that attention? Is it the pressure of being the person carrying the project rather
100%.
Than...
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. 100%.
Terrifying.
It really is terrifying.
People won't get that. They'll see that, you know, we are still on stage. There's still all the people looking at you, but it's the pressure element.
Yeah, 100%. Okay. So lyrics, you know, you're doing everything, and it's just sound.
Ricky never worries about getting the lyrics right. We don't worry about things like getting
Never get them right. That's fine. I can't believe I've been getting away with it for so long.
Yeah. You can just come up with something else, you know, saying sometimes it's just, a random word that you come up with. No one notices it. It's just, you know, just pretend it didn't happen. Oh. I don't know how to play with that. But.
How do you find your sound? So, okay, so you've been a backing vocalist in it for a pop act. When you're thinking about Nina as an artist, how do you begin to find your sound in terms of, you know, what's the inspiration for the first version of Nina as a solo artist?
I feel like that was the thing that took the longest to find myself as an artist and to find my sound. And it was probably when I released We Are the Wild Ones in 2013 that things changed for me. And I felt very connected with the sound. And I met a band called Hunter's a Horse. I connected with Aztec Records. And we just all connected really well. We had the same vision.
Synthwave was kind of bubbling then,
wasn't it? Yeah, it was like underground and it just felt really... Because also it obviously touches on, you know, the kind of 80s electronic elements, and that's what I grew up with. So it was like it's something that gradually I started to get a bit more confident in doing. I think working with other people, when I started, it was more like, here's a song and sing it. And I was happy to do that. But then I realized quickly that you're not really as connect with a song. If you've written their lyrics, it's a complete different experience. And I think at the time we worked Lau for Mastic Records, and I worked with Hunt as a Horse for the first two EPs. I think we just separated, went different ways with the band, who actually wrote the two EPs. And so we kind of were pushed into write something yourself.
Yeah.
You know, and you can do it. And so Beyond Memory happened.
Yeah.
That's when we collaborated with Sunglasses Kid and a really cool band from Devon called The Levity.
Yeah.
Who wrote it with us. And
were you all together?
We were all together in Devon, actually.
Wow.
I mean, The Levity, Lau and I, and Sunglasses Kid had basically the main idea, the instrumental Beyond Memory. And then we all worked on it, the lyrics and at the top line and things like that. But I think this was kind of when I started to be, we actually used my idea, my lyrics, the first kind of idea in the first draft, when it's kind of about a relationship and how it can completely break you. And you feel like someone's ripping out your heart and you feel numb. And that was kind of like the starting point for the idea behind Beyond Memory. And
That's now a classic. That's a classic song, isn't
it? It is.
It's very popular. It has like millions of views on or plays on Spotify, which is lovely, which is amazing. So that's kind of how it started. And then it just gradually, I started to write more and more. And then I split up with my previous label, Aztec Record, just before the pandemic hit, and that's when I really was just, you're on your own now, you gotta, you know. And I started to write, you know, I was sent some instrumentals and some songs, and I just threw myself in there, and I realized I can really make this work.
So
my lyrics are good.
In your head, when you go to make a song, what drives you? Is it a case of, okay, I've got a theme, a message, there's something I want to write about, and that comes out? Or is it a case you hear a melody or you hear a piece of music and go, oh, now it makes me think of this, and that's what I'm going to write about? Or can it be both?
It can be both, but more so the second one.
Okay. So you're inspired by the music that you hear to write?
Absolutely, and I just let it take over. It's very rarely premeditated.
Okay.
It's really more like, very often, actually, recently, I will send an instrumental or an idea, and I play the song. Actually, I don't hear the song before I start recording it or writing to it. It's very spontaneous. I play it, I have my headphones on, I've got the microphone, and I just start singing.
Okay.
And within 5 minutes, hopefully, if I connect with a song, it's there.
There.
The idea is, and it just comes then. You know, obviously, it's usually just some gobbledygook.
Is it
at
a visual
first
thing? So, like, you hear the music and you see something as well as hearing something. We've talked to people before who have very visual experiences. They're already not having seen a video necessarily, but they're seeing colours, or there's shades that appear to them as they're hearing something for the first time.
For me, visually, maybe less so. It's more like emotions.
Okay.
It's like I tap into something, maybe something that I forgot that was there.
Like a trigger almost.
Yeah. I think it's more that. It's just emotions, pure emotions, and not even thinking, actually. And then the lyrics just... that's when I think when the melody is there, I just and sing some vowels or some kind of weird words. Mm. It sounds like something, and then the story slowly builds, and it's like, okay, I think I feel like I'm in the mood of singing about a hopeful love runaway story or something, or whatever it may be.
So it's when you write songs, Ricky, if you provide an instrumental or a backing track to somebody and say, go here, have this, see what works for you. Is it really odd with what they then come back with if it's so far removed
really odd
from what you've... Because
so
even though you've written the
really
music,
strange,
you probably still have some idea in your head of what you might been feeling when you wrote it. When someone then comes back with something that's like, my God, that is not what I saw for
song. Yeah, there's a track that I wrote a little while ago that I sent to Nina, funny enough, and the title of it was, I think it started yesterday, and for me that was kind of like it's all about when you fall in love with someone, you can't really pinpoint the actual moment that you fell in love with them, but you just wake wake up one day and you suddenly realise you're in love with them. And so that, and I thought, I think it started yesterday, but I'm not really sure, kind of vibe. That is where my head was. And I thought, oh, that could be really good as a title. So I'd sung that in the demo that I sent to Nina and said, look, this is the rough idea that I've got. Have a listen to what you think. She goes, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, great. So about a couple of weeks later, she sends back, she goes, I've chosen a title, by the way. I thought, oh, right, okay.
To what? We all need to know now. Oh, no, we can't say.
Okay. We'll talk about this later, shall we?
So let's fast forward a bit. So you've settled in London, you've released two incredible albums on Aztec that has seen you rise to be, you know, named the Queen of Synthwave. You're heading the genre, which must come with a fair bit of pressure in terms of how you feel.
Yeah.
So you move back home to Germany, as you say, following COVID and all sorts of other stuff that happened. So, and you're thinking, now what do I do?
Mm.
Let's tell the tail end of the Synthian story in terms of what I think were the last couple of songs that got added to Synthian. And there is this is the legend, the story that some people will know and some people won't, in terms of how Ricky and Nina came to be. Because for people that won't know, on Nina's Synthian album, there are two compositions that Nina and Ricky worked on together that made the record, and that was their first time working together, where we are sat now in that studio. Ooh. So how did that happen? How does the godfather of pop and synth come exactly together with the queen of synthwave? How does that relationship happen?
You just need to know someone called Lee who's talking to us right now.
Well, yeah, a tiny part.
Well, I'll start it. I'll start the story. So Lee phones me up, and every now and again we go to the odd gig here and there, and we've been to some amazing gigs.
Goldfrapp, funnily enough, when you mentioned Goldfrapp.
Yeah, we've been to loads of bands. And so he phoned up and he said, look, there's an amazing gig happening at Scala in King's Cross. Did you want to come to it? It's The Midnight, who we are all fans of. And so I said, yeah, that sounds really good. I said, so what do you want to do? Do you want to, should we meet up there beforehand? And we have a bite to eat, and then we'll go in and go to the gig. So he said, yeah, we'll do that. So we went to Five Guys, I think it was.
We did have a Five Guys.
And, so we went into Five Guys and having our chips and our burger and having a little chat about life.
Perfect
and
gig prep.
Absolutely.
And at that point, I think I just finished Here Come the Aliens album with Kim, and it was kind of in that moment where it's all done, and I had a bit of time off. And so Lee said, so what are you doing now? The album's finished. Whatever you're working with, are you going to be working on another album, or are you going to do anything else, you know? And I said, well, I don't know. I'll probably have a little bit of time off, actually. And so he said, but have you thought about like working with other artists and stuff and writing? And I thought, well, yeah, I suppose I could do, but I don't know who. And obviously, Lee is now my pimp.
That's what we're the pop pimp.
The pop pimp. He's my pop pimp. So he's my pop pimp.
That's
so
great.
Yeah, that's him. He's my pop pimp.
Yeah.
So
I will whore him out for anything.
Yeah, and I would gladly be that whore for him. And so he said, well, I'll tell you who you should work with, and it would be amazing if you did. And I said, who's that? And he said, well, remember that amazing track that I sent you a little while ago, Beyond Memory, Nina. And I said, oh, yeah, love that track. Yeah, love that. Love that idea. So, yeah, maybe you can make it happen, Lee. Who knows? So we walked out of Five Guys, and then as we walk up to the venue, there's a massive queue outside waiting to go into the gig to see The Midnight. And there's a white jacket that was kind of flashing halfway through the queue. And Lee gives me a nudge, and he says, you're not going to believe who that is in the queue. I think that is actually Nina. And there you were, in the middle of the queue. And I'm going to let Lee take over from this point.
Yes.
So we're in the queue, and we spot Nina, and I say, that's her. And initially we're like, no, it can't be. This is ridiculous. We've just been talking about her. It's too much of a coincidence. The fact you're wearing a jacket that says Nina on the back
exactly
is a bit of a giveaway. So we realise it is you. We don't think any more of it, other than me saying to Ricky, you know, we've really got to talk to this to this woman and you've got to work together. And Ricky, being the humble legend that he is, no, don't, I don't do that. It's, you know, why would she want to do that? No. And I'm like, please. Anyway, so we go into the venue and we're having a look at the merch and having a mooch about and buying a drink and whatnot. And we go in and I think we're watching Savoir Adore, who I remember being the support act, and they were great fun. And we stood quite near the back, I think, of the flat floor in the Scala. And I looked, and Ricky's on my right. I look to my left, no word of a lie, standing 2 feet away from me is Nina. So I hadn't met Nina before, but we'd messaged back and forth a bit because I'd blogged about you many, many, many times over the previous songs and stuff. And so I thought, well, I'm going to go and say hello, even if you're not Ricky Wilde. You can stay there. So I said, hi, Nina, I'm Lee from the Teasers and Dares blog, and you knew who I was, which was lovely, and we had a lovely chat. And I said, can I introduce you to my friend Ricky Wilde? And your immediate reaction, I can remember your face, you were like, that Ricky Wilde? And I was like, that Ricky Wilde. And before...
In true pimp fashion.
In true pimp fashion. Exactly. And before I could control the brain and the mouth combo of how they worked, anyway, he'd love to work with you. And I could see Ricky's face like, oh, I want the world, the ground to open up and swallow me up. So I moved sideways, moved Ricky that way to talk to you. And I think the legend is that a week later, you're in this studio cutting Runaway?
I think it went kind of like, I was just asking, I remember asking Nina how things are going, what you're up to, and she goes, oh, we're doing an album at the moment as it happens. And I said, all right, and is it all written and done? She goes, no, we're 2 tracks short. So, of course, I just thought, well, if you fancy coming down to the studio and doing a bit of writing and maybe, you know, write a couple of tracks. And I thought maybe I'd get 1 track on the album. And then Nina came down with Laura about a week later, I think it was. Really quite quick.
Yeah, it was very quick. Yeah, it was just the perfect timing.
Yeah, and the first one we wrote was Runaway, and that came really quickly.
That is so many people's favourite song on the album.
It is, yeah.
Well, that's lovely to hear. And the other one was Gave Up On Us, which I was also very, very proud of. Well, both of them, but but that was really lovely the way that all came about. It's very organic.
Yeah, and like I say, they are two, I think, so many people, Runaway as a standout track on the record. So that plants the seed, doesn't it, in terms of where we're going to go next. So Cynthian comes out, off we go. Eventually Nina moves back to Germany, goes back home, starts thinking about what next. Mm. And you think maybe, so is it time for Nina 3? So third album.
Yeah.
Who should I start maybe writing with again? You've obviously developed a nice little rapport. Shall I do the reveal at this point in time? Let's do it.
Shall we do it? I think you should do it, Lee.
Yes.
Because you were the master that made all this work, the maestro.
The pop pimp.
I pimped to the max on this one. So I am really genuinely honoured to tell you that in the next couple of months, the world is going to be introduced to Ricky Wilde times Nina. We have a whole album, not a single, not an EP. We have an album of truly the most stunning pop music that you're going to hear this year. And I am not exaggerating when I tell you folks this. So, Nina, do you want to tell a little bit about the story in terms of how it went from maybe being Nina 3 to actually being a fully fledged Nina times Ricky album? And then I'll let you maybe do the album title reveal, because I think that we've hinted at what it could be. So when's the moment, Nina, when you think, do you know what we've got going on here is something a bit different to what I thought?
Yeah, I think, so I was thinking Nina album 3. And Ricky and I were always in touch during the time, of course. And, you know, we started becoming good friends. And I think it was always a thing where, you know, I've got an instrumental, you know, should I send it to you? Do you feel like you want to sing on it? Or let's be creative together still. And so we kind of worked on a few songs and I thought that could be for my Nina album 3. And I think we were both so inspired and it was just more and more songs. And then before we knew it, it was a whole album basically. And I just felt like there's so much of both of our worlds in there. This has got to be a collaboration album. And that's kind of, in a nutshell, you know, what this is about. And, but yeah, it was a very, I think we started maybe 2021. And it was a great escape because obviously times were very tough and strange and scary. And but yeah, I think we just it just all feels very natural, and it's so much fun. Obviously, not being in the same room was an experience for us a little bit different because we had previously obviously been in the same room together.
Yeah, and for me that was a totally different. Mm. But with the lockdown, you know, we weren't allowed to go out, or we all had our own bubbles and all that kind of stuff that was going down. Madness, looking back on it. But obviously that's the only way we could work. And I'd never written like that before, really. So it was a little bit of a strange, but it really worked.
Yeah.
And it's a lovely process for me to be in my studio here and just come up with a melody idea and come up with a few chords and whack down a rough demo with a few lyric ideas which I thought could work well, send them off to Nina, and then get these amazing vocals back. And but obviously sometimes the key would be wrong, you know, so she said, well, I'd like you to bring it up 5 semitones or whatever. Or
that happens a lot. Yeah, my voice is quite high.
Yeah, and or down a couple of tones or whatever. But and then I would just change all the MIDI and stuff and get it all happening, and key my vocal up as well to
so
give her a rough idea.
Ricky Wilde is singing on this record.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful vocals.
Oh,
I think we sound
you.
Great together. It sounds so powerful.
I think people were quite surprised in a really pleasant way when Pop Don't Stop came out as a single for Kim's previous record, because Ricky features on that as a vocalist, and loads of folks were like, where have you been hiding this voice? Why aren't you singing more? You know,
exactly.
And the beautiful tone to his voice comes out, which everyone will get to hear across a number of the tracks on this.
Well, that's lovely to hear. Thank you very much. But it's never being an artist and a producer is two totally different things, and a writer obviously. But I love writing. I love production, but I've never had any aspirations to be an artist. So for me,
what was your response? So when Nina calls and goes, do you know what, Rick? I don't think this is Nina 3. I think this is something else.
Yeah, it was a shock. I was shocked. And it
a
kind
good
of,
shock?
I was deeply flattered, of course, and but it's not something I'd ever thought of. For me, I was just so used to just, you know, doing what I do, and to suddenly be asked to do something that's totally outside my comfort zone was a little bit scary. But also, it was kind of like, do you know what? I'm at my time in my life now where why would I say no to something like that, to work with those amazing vocalist and beautiful person, and just have the opportunity of having, you know, something.
It was
to be really
moment,
proud of, you know.
Yeah. It was a fuck it, let's do it.
Yeah, it was. I just thought, well, why not? You know, there's absolutely no reason not to. Mm. And so, yeah, I've fully embraced it, and I'm so glad I did, because we've had so much fun since then, and we've, you know, I'm really proud of what we've achieved, you know.
I've been very, very lucky to be a fly on the wall virtually through the creative process, hearing different versions of the songs.
Oh, you've been an integral part
emerge,
of it.
I'm not sure about that. But it's, I've watched you both grow as the record has developed, in terms of, you know, I've said several times to you, Ricky, you've played me something, and I'm like, you've got something out of Nina here, vocally, lyrically, that is just, she's gone up a notch in every sense of what she's done. And I feel you've pulled that from her. But I'd speak to Ricky, and you probably don't know this, Nina, but I'd speak to Ricky sometimes, and he'd be like, oh my God, her attention to detail, it's unreal, I love it. But he genuinely loved it. He's like, she's so specific when she gives me feedback, like, at 3:14, I want more of this.
Yeah, I'm like
very,
very particular, especially about vocals. It's like very,
but
very...
But he loved it. He loved all of that. He was like, I'm so into the fact that her attention to detail is that matches mine in terms of, you know... And
but also, because, you know, sometimes people, when they're coming in with constructive criticism, it's not very specific, so you don't really know what they're saying, or you know, they say, oh, I hear it a little bit rounder, or a little
what
bit
does that mean?
You know, and it's kind of like I just find that a bit confusing sometimes,
of course.
And But when you have someone like Nina that says, you know, at 3:14, there's a really weird noise, or my vocal seems to be a little bit strange there. Just have it, you know, was my breath a little bit too loud at this point? And just like, what? Was it a bit sibilant here and there? And it's kind of, oh, right, okay. So it's really specific, and it really helped me to see where she was, how she wanted to hear it. And that made my life so much easier.
Yeah. And yeah, you were such a good sport as well. Like, I never felt like, because, you know, sometimes it can be people are finding it a little bit, I don't know, oh, there's more work to do, or, you know, oh, she's too much of a diva, I don't know, you know. But I never felt like I could always tell you everything, and you always, you know, did it just the way I wanted it, and without any, you know, so I really appreciate it. It was the most humbling experience working with you. Really was.
You can, when people hear this record, which they will very soon, we'll talk more about that in a second, you will hear it is the meeting of two musical worlds. You made such the right call on this, Nina, in terms of it is 50% an equal partnership, and you can hear so much of Ricky, you can hear so much of you across all of the songs. Even if one of you might be more obvious on the track, when you listen more deeply, you'll hear the influence of the other coming through in the song with something really significant within. It might be a small part of the song, but it's a really significant part of the song, and the way that it comes together. So I feel we need to do the title reveal at this point in time. So Ricky Wilde times Nina's debut album. We say that because then we will lead to there being another one, please, in the future.
Please.
Is going to be called...
Should we do it together? All right, shall we?
3, 4.
Scala Hearts.
Yeah.
Obviously, an ode to Scala, where we met in that queue.
What? I mean, it couldn't be a more apt title. Yeah.
So we are definitely happy for the people that work at Scala to have us there perform our
We'll be there.
Launch gig, please. it was such a magical night, as it turned out to be. Who knew? You know, none of us knew what was going to come. But that's such a beautiful title for the record. So what we're going to do now is have a little bit of a special treat for everybody, because we can give you a run through and a little bit of a track by track of the songs that you're going to get to hear. So let's start with what's going to be the first single. And I know it's a podcast, and I know I'm going to say these words. You've no idea how much this song is going to blow everyone away. Because it was the first time I heard it, I knew it was special. It had a bit of a significant tweak that we'll talk about in a minute in terms of what happened to a very specific part of the song, which has elevated it further. So shall I do the reveal of the first single? The debut single by Ricky Wilde times Nina is going to be called LA Dreamers. Tell us about the song.
We pretty much finished the album. I thought the album was complete, but it felt like an extended EP, because there was like one of the tracks, which we'll talk about later on, there was a 7-inch version and there was also an extended version. And I just thought it would be nice if we could have an extra track rather than have two tracks of the same.
Like a balance.
Yeah. And at that point, I said to you, I said, Lee, I think maybe I should come up with one more track. And you said, are you sure?
Yeah,
are you sure?
It's all sounding... I nearly talked everybody out of this one.
It's all sounding so good as it is. Why change it?
I was just being impatient. It's ready. Let's get it out.
So I thought, well, I'll give it a go, and nothing to lose. So let's try and come up with one more. And within... I think 2 days, I think LA Dreamers came up really, really quickly.
Yeah, it's quick.
One of those songs that, you know, like most of the best ones do, come really quickly. So
did you write the music for that one and send Nina a backing track, or did you?
Yeah, I was listening to Lost in Love, the album by Pensacola Mist, which I absolutely love. And there's a few tracks on there that really inspired me. And that was kind of the main inspiration musically for it. And lyrically, actually, the whole LA thing, and so that was kind of like where the inspiration came, the main inspiration came from. And then I demoed it and sent it over to Nina, and Nina, I think I wrote the first verse, and then Nina, I said, now this is the bit where you sing, and you come up with your lyric.
Write some words, please.
you do your bit now. And the idea behind lyrically for me was me and Nina, like, sitting over a mountain overlooking LA and just seeing the lights sort of like glistening in the distance. And it was almost like a love song to LA.
Yeah.
You know, it's beautiful and it's broken, but it's fucked up, but it's fucking amazing, you know. And so I kind of like portrayed that over to Nina, and I said, so this is roughly where I'm coming from with this.
And what did and you then, think? What did you think when you heard it?
Oh my god! I mean, every time he sends me something, it's just amazing. So I was like, I cannot wait to record and sing some vocals. And you know, I mean, what I'm singing is a little bit, you know, kissing in backseat. That's not what I was.
It's a saucy little number.
So I took that. Then for me, it just became something like, you know, those old Hollywood movies where you see the couples in the car looking, you know, over the mountain, the cliffs there, and the glamour of that. But it's, you know, it's romantic and it can be a little sexy, but it's also very dreamy. And like you say, it's LA. You know, we both love LA, and it's broken, but it's beautiful, and there's so much hope there. And
So I got to hear an early cut of it, and Ricky had recorded, I think it was you, had recorded this, it was meant to sound like a radio DJ kind of voice in the middle of the track, like an announcer. And when I heard it, I was like, this needs to be bolder. It's go for it. Don't hide it in the track. It could really elevate it. And so what happened, Ricky, in terms of a perfect twist of fate?
Yeah, it was a wonderful moment. Obviously, I work a lot with Kimmy, and we do loads and loads of gigs with the Kim Wild Band, and we have an amazing time. And we were offered a cruise, an 80s cruise, in Mexico. And it was a fantastic gig. We were out there for a week, and when we got there, we were kind of like ushered onto the boat on this minibus. And I was sitting on the minibus, and I just heard this voice, this American voice, and it just sounded so rich and gorgeous. And I just thought, that's the voice that we need on this record. It turned out the guy's name is Brad Williams, and he has his own podcast called Stuck in the 80s, and he was going to be on the boat with us, and he was going to be interviewing and introducing some of the acts that were playing live. I just thought his voice was incredible. So anyway, so we got off the bus, and I saw him, and I winged my way over, and I said, I hope you don't mind me introduce myself, but I'm Ricky Wilde, we're doing this, we're doing the album, we need the vocal on there, and your voice would be unbelievable on it if you're up for doing it. And he just looked at me and said, I think I've just found my new best friend. And we had a big hug, and we had a little, it was a very nice moment. And then I sent him the backing track, and I said, look, this is the rough idea. And I said, if you can just come up with any words that you think would fit in that bit. And bless him, he just came up with a few ideas, and the ones that finished up on there were just so perfect for the track. It's so beautiful, and he's perfect. Such a lovely soul, and he's very open, he's very trusting, which is qualities that I really love in people. Mm. So he's just a great energy for the album,
and it's really the track that probably describes the album the most, in terms of it's the most equal song, it feels like. Almost, it's got so much of both of you in it.
Yeah.
The vocal is shared. It's probably the least synth wave in a way, and the most pure pop moment, I think, on the record for me. That's what hit me.
Yeah.
But the melody is, it's just going to be in your heads when you hear it. And we think it might be as soon as a couple of weeks from now. We're not quite sure when this is going to go out, but let's say August. Let's be confident and say that it's going to be hitting streaming services in August. So LA Dreamers, the first single from Ricky Wilde times Nina. So as we move through some of the other songs on the album, there is one of the tracks, it's probably one of my favourites as well, is a beautiful track called Causeway. And Nina, I think it is your best vocal that we've heard from you.
Thank you.
On record so far. As I say, Ricky pushed you, I think, with this, and you just go somewhere with it. Tell us about Causeway and what that one means to you.
Causeway, it's kind of like being a searcher and finding out truth, but also it's a very romantic song. So maybe perhaps when you're a little bit scared to, you know, you're in love and you worry to lose them, or you feel, you know, to commit yourself, it's like a big deal, and maybe you're a bit scared of that. So it's kind of a few things, but for me, it was a lot about finding your own truth and just being a searcher and in life. And so, yeah, it's a very, it's kind of a hopeful song, though.
And the Causeway word. Where does the Causeway come from?
I didn't even know what Causeway was.
No, we were talking like, what's a Causeway?
What's a Causeway?
Where did the word come from?
See, this is a song that I think it started yesterday.
The
song
that
when it came back as Causeway, it's kind of like, hey, what's a fucking Causeway? And then once we found out what it was,
asked me, didn't you? What does it actually mean?
So where did the word come from?
So
for you?
So there's the band called Causeway.
There are.
I love Causeway. Yes.
And I absolutely adore them. They're on Italian Still Better on the label, and it's a duo, and the songs are absolutely incredible. I love their writing, their singing, their production, and it was the time when I was really just into their songs and listening a lot of it, and I just. When I first started, I didn't know what Causeway meant either. So I guess I just Googled, and then it just kind of happened around that time, and I felt like that's kind of a nice, you know, being that kind of inner searcher, and Causeway, I just had that vision of walking along the Causeway and trying to, just dreaming and trying to find your own truth and what life means and what love means and things like that. And that's kind of how the title came about. I just thought I was perfect to the song. I just felt like the melody and the feeling of the song, Causeway, was the perfect title for it.
Yeah.
And it was
beautiful.
And thank God you did change it. Because it's a much better title.
It's a beautiful song.
It started yesterday. It's pretty good too.
Not quite as good though.
Causeway's tiny bit snappier.
A little bit snappier.
We can agree with. It's not a ballad, but it's one of the slower songs, but it's just so moving. And I've heard it a lot, and it still gets to me every time that I hear it. It's still got such a beautiful emotional reaction that I get when I'm listening to it, and I know everyone will feel the same. So the next track, now this is an interesting one. 80s fans, real hardcore 80s fans, are going to love this. So this is one of my favourite 80s songs that people really don't give enough credit to, because I think the act that recorded it were a bit dismissed as being a bit throwaway. Perhaps they weren't very cool. I was talking to Nina earlier on and sort of explaining the history of the group. So the band were Dollar. Had loads of hits in the UK, but were thought of as a bit cheesy in the day, despite having some top-notch production and whatnot around them. And the song of theirs I've always loved is Videotech. Mm. And I've always heard Nina singing Therese's vocal of Videotech. Yeah. There's something about your voices that I just think had a similarity.
Yeah.
And tell us about Videotech and how you approached it, Rick, as well.
Well, I remember ages ago, Lee, you flagged that up to me and said, Rick, I really hear Nina singing this as a duet. I thought maybe with Ollie Ride. In my head, it was always going to be Ollie, because I just love his voice and I love him as a vibe. And I thought he would be so cool with Nina. But obviously, at that point, we needed like some more tracks, and I thought that maybe that could be the cover that we put on the album. And so I had an idea that straight away how the production should sound, and with some nice meaty guitars and
huge production,
and make it a little bit rockier, and we've added like guitar solo in it.
Yes,
it's kind of
so
got
it's a
different vibe to the original. It's a bit tougher.
But it's got so much attitude.
I do love it, and it's I'm very proud of it, how it's all turned out.
So to be clear, that singer that we're talking about is Ricky Wilde, in case anyone's wondering. It's Ricky and Nina singing Videotech together. And it just will blow you away.
I mean, I do have the song stuck in my head all the time, every day. It's a brilliant song to begin with, but it really was such a cool idea to cover that. It's a perfect cover for the album. And
what
with
a
your
genius!
Production. Yeah.
What a genius you
Thank
are,
you, Lee.
Thank you, Lee.
The word as well. I'm all about a good word for a title.
Videotech.
If there isn't a word that couldn't be more like early 80s than Videotech.
Yeah. However it's spelled.
However Ricky spells it. We have a slight spelling.
T-H, okay? T-H.
Well, that's all fine. What's an H between friends? It was begging to be covered. It's one of those songs that just people don't pick up on. And
I've always loved Dollar. I mean, obviously, Trevor's production was absolutely astonishing on all their stuff.
They've got some great tunes in there.
Mirror Mirror, for me, is probably one of the best pop songs of all time. It's just incredibly well thought out and beautifully programmed
but the combination of their voices too, you know, David had a pretty full-on powerful belty kind of voice, Therese's was very soft, and that's what I heard.
This was born
to be this way, so you're not going to be disappointed, people, when you hear Video Tech 2023.
Woo-hoo!
Trust
Yay!
Me and there might be some visuals for it.
Might be a video.
That would be exciting. Okay, so that's very exciting. So let's keep going through. Fade Me In. Tell me about Fade Me In.
Very dramatic.
It is very dramatic.
I think it's like, I mean, I love them all. Of course, they're all very special. But for some reason, I think Fade Me Out.
Fade Me Out.
Actually.
Fade Me In.
Everyone's calling Fade Me In or Fading Me Out. No, it's just Fade Me Out.
I think in the way that it's tagged on my iTunes in the file that I've been given.
There you go. It's not your fault.
It's called Fade Me In.
Fade Me Out is my favourite song on the album.
It's the one that probably changed the most, I think, in terms of it's had the most progression from what it started as. Yeah. So what came first with this one in terms of who led the way with this?
Well, I came up with a backing track, and I've been listening to some stuff on, or watching stuff on TikTok and Instagram.
Oh, get Ricky, and he's so down with the kids.
I'm so down with the
so
kids.
Down oh, with
so
the
down.
Kids.
And there was a bit of music that came on TikTok that I heard that kind of inspired it. And I just loved the chords. And I just thought, oh, let's see if I can do something like that. And so I just programmed something up. And I have this amazing plugin that has these big, mad orchestral drums. Mm. And I just thought that it'd be
it's
lovely to have.
It's very marching bandish,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. And so I like the idea of having like a really down moment in the verses, but then suddenly come out of it to a big crash and something really dramatic.
It's like a storm.
Then,
it feels like a thunderstorm.
It does,
And then stop dead and go back into the, you know, I wanted it to be like very, very dramatic.
Rock opera.
Yes. So that's kind of like the inspiration behind it. I didn't really have any specific lyric ideas for it. I had a few ideas, and I sent those over to Nina and said, look, this is roughly where I'm going with it. And some of the lyrics that I'd written then and sang did finish up being in the master. Mm. But some of them were changed, and Nina again came back with some changes, which I wasn't expecting, which just turned it around from being...
It's definitely changed the most, that song, hasn't it? From what it started as.
Yeah, so it's also just a very... I feel like the way you wrote it and the lyrics you had as well already, they're just kind of hit home, because to me it was kind of the fear of letting someone go, and I was going through a very dramatic breakup and a long relationship, and just, you know, just basically being ready to be yourself again, and that's kind of what the song means to me. It's it's kind of you know, standing on your own feet and just letting go of something that doesn't serve you anymore, that isn't good for you. So that's why it's a very personal song. And then just like you say, I mean, it's just such an epic song,
it
but it's
really
very
is.
Emotional as well. So yeah, that's kind of what
it's
it meant
a huge
to me.
One again, and shows the contrast across the record. I think that's really important for people to know. None of the songs sound like each other. They've all got their own personality and their own sound to some degree. They stand alone. What I love about a great album, one great album can be where it's really cohesive. That can be something fabulous. But when you get an album that's got so many different sounds and you have a new favourite each day, it's like, today I really feel this one, or today I really feel this one. I think that's what Scala Hearts is going to be for people because the songs are so different. Talking of different, probably even bigger in the drama front, we have Living in Sin.
Oh, I love that song. That is Ricky, 100% pure, wild Ricky.
It really is.
Well, that's, yeah, it's quite a dark song. It's, it's kind of, when I started writing the melody for it, there's like a little riff on the intro and over these kind of sad chords. And it just kind of, it just made me think about like family relationships and how some people have very close ties to their family and others not so close. And I just thought that was a really interesting subject matter. So that's kind of like what inspired it. And I have a couple of friends.
Yes, I can relate to this one.
that have particularly difficult relationships with, with certain members of their family. So I kind of pulled upon my own experiences and other people's experiences as well, and it was quite a cathartic song to write, actually.
Yeah.
And I'm very proud of it. And
did you tell Nina what it was about when you shared it with her, or did you
yes,
find it herself?
I did. Yeah. And actually, it wasn't going to go on the album, to be honest with you, because the rest of the album is very much more collaborative, I would say, as in co-written. Nina would always come up with ideas lyrically.
She makes some very significant contributions, shall we say.
Oh, no, absolutely. But,
perfectly delivered moments.
But Nina said, no, this is your song. The lyric says it all.
Yeah.
And I can't...
I'm not going to touch that. Perfect, yeah.
Bless you.
Yeah. But you do still make a really brilliant contribution
she
to it. When you
does.
Hear it, you'll
she
know what
certainly
we mean.
Does.
It's all your words. I just landed my vocals.
And Living in Sin can mean different... I think that song is one that will mean different things to different people.
Yeah.
They'll hear... Everyone will find a different message from it, I think.
Yeah,
it won't necessarily be what we hear or we think of what we know it to be
absolutely.
About, but other people will find something else in it, which is what great songs are meant to be, personal to you as the listener in terms of what it does for you. So we the next song some people will be familiar with already because it's been out once in one version, and it's Gold Heart. It's one of my favourite songs, one of my favourite Nina songs, but it's got a new spin, shall we say. Describe that new spin for me on Gold Heart.
It's actually quite funny. It's actually an old spin.
Is it an old spin?
Isn't it?
Yes.
We've gone back to almost version A
before
version B.
Absolutely, right?
Yeah. But with a bit of additional... What do you used to call it? Pizzazzing. It's got a bit of an extra Ricky pizzazz on it, hasn't it? The version of Gold Heart that we've got. It's bolstered.
Bolstered, yes. Let's say that, yeah.
Let's say it's bolstered.
Yeah.
I always think, when I hear it, and the lyric, it might be something very different in terms of what you mean, I always think it describes Ricky. I think
100%,
it describes how you feel
right.
about Ricky and your relationship with him. When you describe... The chorus could be written like it's you.
Yeah, it's absolutely. Because I know when you first sent me the song and what it meant to you and what it was about for you, that's, when I was singing, that's what I was thinking about. But obviously the person you were maybe thinking about, I don't know personally. Mm. So for me, it really became you, when I was singing it.
And
singing
I hear
it,
him.
I
think
heart.
It's about, this most generous man that you'll ever meet.
Yeah.
It's you. You,
and
you
basically
have the gold heart.
Exactly, and I've just been using a yellow heart in my emoji ever since.
Absolutely. So I think it's a Cynthia version. I think it's fair to say. I think people will love it.
Yeah.
Not that we don't love the slightly rockier version of it, but I think the Cynthia version fits so beautifully in the scheme of the record.
Very uplifting.
It is very uplifting.
Yeah.
We have three to go. Let's talk about Night and Day. It's one of the songs that I think production-wise is a track. It's a track that gives me a bit of Kim circa 1983, Catch As Catch Can.
Oh, okay.
There's a little bit of House of Slow Me and Dream Sequence in parts of it for me. So I hear some real classic Ricky Wilde production in this one, which you might not pick up on if you're not familiar with that very specific era, that album Catch As Catch Can, but it's got that feel to it.
Mm-hmm. I was very influenced by OMD on this particular track as well. There's a synth riff that and that's very OMD. They always had these beautiful little synth riffs sort of running through their verses, and I used to love. Well, I still do. I think they're amazing, OMD. We've been lucky enough to work with them a few times. Great
people.
OMD
as well, by the way, if I may say.
We all do.
And they're such amazing people and so very talented. So so that was a big influence on the musically. Lyrically, Nina was drove this one.
Yeah, it's an emotional
big time,
one, isn't it?
Yeah, again, it's very personal because of what I had gone through at the time, and it's just kind of breaking the chains again, you know, be it relationship, you know, whatever people, when they listen to it, it can mean something else to them, but that's kind of, you know, just you know, facing the darkness,
like,
and
freedom.
To see the light.
It's a song about freedom. That's
it's
what I
exact
think
breaking
of
the
it.
Chains.
Someone feeling. Yeah. I've often said to you, it's the caged bird sings.
Exactly.
For
absolutely.
In terms of your you know, you're becoming free.
Yeah. Because sometimes you might be in a relationship where you really shouldn't be in, or you know, you just it's not fitting, or it can be a little bit controlling, or you know, some people go through very traumatic things and they might not feel like they have the confidence to walk away.
Yeah.
And that's what it's about, really. It's just walking away and, you know, freeing yourself from the chains.
Yeah. It's and again, vocally, I think it's probably one of your strongest vocals. It builds. It's got epic build, hasn't it, in terms of the way the vocal is kind of almost angelic.
And it's quite a powerful chorus, which I really like what you did with the instrumental. It's very powerful.
It feels like three songs in one.
Yeah.
It's got so many composite parts.
Dynamic,
It kind of goes so many places.
Yeah, again, it's quite dramatic, isn't it?
We like drama.
Drama. My God, drama llama.
Musical drama, of course.
Musical opera drama happening across this record. There's lots of fun too, people, just to be clear. There's lots of fun, but there are some big moments. So, Fighter. How do we feel about Fighter?
Oh, I absolutely adore Fighter.
Okay. What's special for
it
you?
It started quite differently, actually, and then for some reason we both felt like it needed a new approach.
Mm.
And you literally worked on it. I don't know, the next day you sent it to me, and I was just absolutely blown away. It's so beautiful. It starts off very, very emotional and quite intimate. And it just goes off on one just flies away and takes all the wings with you. It's just so powerful. And it's called Fighter, of course. And it's also, again, you know, finding your inner strength and knowing how powerful you are.
Yeah.
And you know, and being confident in what you're doing, what you believe in, and who you are, knowing that you're a good person. And that's kind of what it means to me. But it's a great song.
We played it to our mutual good friend Steve Anderson when he was here for a visit.
Steve.
In the studio.
Yeah.
Hi, Steve.
And
love you, Steve.
And he loved Fighter.
I think it was
his favourite when he heard it. It
amazing.
Was another epic one. There's a lot of epic production.
Yeah,
I don't think Ricky can't do not epic.
No, it's not. It's not within him, is it? To do kind of minimal. It's not really. Well, we say this, but then you see what he does with Kim's acoustic show when they do the strip shows, and it's totally within him to do that.
So, there you go.
So he can just do
strip
it all.
Shows.
He can just do it
strip
all.
Shows.
So not stripped. Stripped, acoustically stripped. Not you not wearing any clothes. No one needs
that.
acoustic strip shows. No, that's
Now there's a pitch. Not that type. Musically stripped.
Just now, originally, that song, we kind of finished it, and it sounded nice, and it was all good, and I was quite happy with it. But it just sounded a bit... it wasn't a moment. I didn't feel it was a particular moment that I wanted to go to or flick forward for whatever reason. And every other track on that album, in different ways, did have a moment.
Yeah.
And so that was bugging me a bit about it. And so I kept Nina's vocal, changed the tempo slightly, and changed the melody on the vocal, using Melodyne, and redid the whole backing track, and with different chords, and everything was all changed, and it suddenly transformed from a kind of 8 out of 10 song, or not even that, probably a 7 or a 6 out of 10, to, for me, one of the best songs on the album.
Yeah.
It's, you've got pretty much an album of singles, to be honest, now, in terms of the way that it's all come together. It's another stunner. And so we end our track by track with a track that the Kim Wilde fans, the real fans, will know. It's a B-side, and Nina, you will know this, that Kim and Ricky have the most ridiculous catalogue of B-sides. You know, on their greatest hits album that came out, they had a disc that was just B-sides that many artists would kill for if that were their A-sides.
Of course, yeah.
The quality was so good.
Yeah.
It's definitely one of the fan favourites. I don't want to reveal this one, but what I will say is that you know this, and you touched upon it earlier. It's had there's lots of versions of this floating around. But if I tell you, and this might lead people to know what track it's coming, that Ricky Wilde can do a very good Giorgio Moroder.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Tell us about the very special track.
Do you know what it was the B-side of?
I do. It was the B-side of The Second Time.
Okay, so...
He's done his homework.
Yeah. See, I didn't know that, so that's why I asked him. I'm making it sound like I knew, but I actually didn't have a clue at all. So Second Time was written and recorded, and MCA was saying, yeah, we love it, and it's going to be a single. We need a B-side, like, really quickly in the next couple of days. So I said, OK, fine, don't worry about it. Went into my then studio at Select Sound, went in there, booted all the gear up, and wrote Lovers on the Beach. And
that,
which finished up being the B-side. But the whole process was so quick, such a fast process of writing it, recording it, and getting the masters over to MCA and then getting it on the B-side and it was released. That it didn't really sink in for me how strong it was as a song, and on retrospect, for years I've always thought there was a little bit more in Lovers on the Beach than what was what happened to it. You know,
I just felt it.
Yeah, I think it deserved a little bit more than that.
Yeah.
I think so. I just thought to try out whether Nina would be up for it. And so I just reprogrammed it all up and did my my best Giorgio Moroder impression that I possibly could. And
it's a disco moment.
It is amazing. I'm so into it.
Yeah. But I didn't know how it could, or whether it would fit on the album. But I sent it over to Nina anyway, and I said, look, this is just an idea I've had, and if you're not feeling it, don't worry about it. If you are, great, because it's not a typical kind of Nina song at all, is it?
No.
It's not. I've not heard you sing anything like
that.
No. to my amazement, Nina came back and said, I love this, and I want to give it a go. So...
it's so disco, can I just say? It's so disco.
But what a vocal.
What a vocal.
What a vocal, man.
But the breakdown, so you know, it's got the original kind of structure of Lovers on the Beach, but when you go full Moroder halfway through, my God. And again, shouting out to Steve Anderson again, you shared that with him, and he was very much like, this has to be on the record. You have to both know how good this is, because it was, I don't think either of you really knew how good this one was. I think you're too close to it, because obviously you've got a history. It was new to you and very different. But every time when track listings were coming up and there was a slight chance it might not make the cut, I was just like, no! People have to hear this version of this song, because it's...
Well, this was also the track that where there was the 7-inch and the 12-inch version. So the 12, for me, was the moment. It just had a moment. And the 7, I've loved it, but it just didn't have the same impact as the 12. So for me, that was the one that had to come off, and hence LA Dreamers was born.
And you like singing it, I take?
I absolutely love it, yeah. And just knowing that, you know, it's Kim's song and she sang it before and I adore it. I'm so happy that I was able to, you know, make you also happy with it and make you proud.
It makes it, I think, wanted me to sing that. It will be a new song to so many people. It will feel like it isn't a cover.
It is such a good song.
It will feel like a brand new song to
absolutely
them.
Yeah, it really is. And I really love the whole Giorgio Moroder vibe. I mean, I'm so into disco and, you know, music, and
I do feel there's a Nina sexy. Disco album in you somewhere. I do feel on a Tallow Disco.
Absolutely, that's maybe that'll be the next one.
That's definitely
I can hear that
there. Voice just seems like it'd be so well suited
to it, and I
know a producer that's available for that project.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
Oh, dear.
So we've reached the end of our run-through of the incredible tracks that you're going to hear very soon. So August, we're going to have LA Dreamers. We think Scarlet Hearts is probably going to land somewhere in September. It's going to blow your minds, people. Get ready for what's coming. These two folks sat in front of me have truly made a pop masterpiece for of all times. It's going to stand up to the test of time because your production is so timeless. It's going to stand up. You've got into the stratosphere, Nina, in terms of your vocal and the confidence that you bring to the record, which is you sound like a new artist, a different artist in terms of where you've gone. So thank you both so much for making the record, first of all.
Thank you, Lee, for making it happen.
So much pleasure. And secondly, thanks for doing the chat today. I think the fans will love hearing how this record came together and what the songs mean to you as well. It'll really resonate with them when they get to hear it properly. What's next for Ricky Times, Nina, in terms of obviously we're gonna hopefully might have a live show maybe one day?
That would be lovely, wouldn't it? That would be lovely. Watch this space.
Okay. Yeah. We will. I think. I feel a London-Berlin kind of,
nice.
There's definitely talks. We'll see if we can make it happen. I think we both definitely will be up for making that happen. I think fans would really love it. And I feel like the album deserves to be seen or to be experienced live.
I mean, there's the chance to throw in Runaway into the set.
Absolutely.
And we should also give props to the track we haven't talked about, The Wire. So whilst not one of the Ricky Wilde tracks on Cynthian, the Cynthian remix album came out. Tell us, Nina, how that must have felt for you in terms of a Ricky's remix, but a rather special guest vocalist appeared.
I mean, it was a dream come true, really. I mean, I don't know what else to call it. It was such a surprise because I had no idea. So I knew you wanted to do a remix of The Wire, but then you came back and first of all, it was absolutely incredible. You know, the guitar solo and wow, it's so sexy.
It's huge, isn't it?
It really is huge and so epic. And then just having Kim sing on it and duet with me. And I must have been jumping on wherever I was sitting or standing, you know,
it's a career moment, it really was
a really special moment and very humbling experience again. And it's one of those things I will never forget. It was a really, really special moment to have you guys, you know, do a remix.
Kim was thrilled because she loved it, I played her the track and she came into the studio while I was working on the remix. And she said, this sounds absolutely beautiful, absolutely gorgeous.
Amazing.
And I said, well, if you want to sing a few lines on there. She said, really? I said, yeah, come on, let's do it. And that's how it all happened.
So
it was very off the cuff. But Kim loved the whole process. Yeah.
Amazing.
And she sounded amazing on it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you both sound amazing together.
So powerful.
So natural together as well.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So that was another moment of Ricky Wilde magic. So thank you both for today. So I've been Lee Bennett. I've been with Ricky and Nina talking about Nina's musical career to date and about the very exciting news that we have a Ricky Wilde times Nina album called Scarlet Hearts that will be in your ears very, very soon. Thank you both.
Thank you, my pop pimp.
Very welcome.
Thank you, Lee.
You have been listening to Unsung Heroes with me, Ricky Wilde, and Lee Bennett, produced and created by myself and Jake Wood for Wildwood Productions, with music and editing, again by myself, Ricky Wilde, artwork by Scarlet Wild and hosted by Acast. Just to remind you that there is a link in the notes directing you to a Spotify playlist featuring all the songs we have discussed in this episode. Many thanks for listening.